What's it entail to be a meat scientist? I think I must be three quarters of the way there.
I reckon you are too.
What are some maybe sleeper steaks that people don't know about?
I love this. All right. So the first thing is you can't just buy a steak and hope that it's going to eat like a filet. It's like uncured bacon is cured.
How do people avoid...
Uncured bacon is cured. I'm trying to remember the last time I had uncured bacon because I can't remember the flavors.
And it's the same thing that makes bread smell so good when it bakes in the oven. It's... Yeah, I know. R.I.P. to carbs. So...
All right, we can throw this out, right? Because like I've had some steaks where somebody got like a really good deal and I'm like... you got a good deal because this shit's bad. Like, that's bad, right?
I shouldn't say this because I'm worried for your bros, but realistically, you can, as long as you cook it, it'll always be safe to eat.
Right.
It just won't taste good. I've been on a lot of trips to Mexico and I've been really inspired by Mexican food. So I like messing with like the salsas and stuff like that. Chili roasting, fire roasting, all that kind of stuff too.
Talk about food porn.
Yeah.
I'm salivating, man.
That shit's so good.
Wow.
That was definitely a fun recipe.
That might have just been porn.
That's seriously not okay.
You said, do you eat carbs though? Because we talked about bread and you were like, RIP.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do?
It makes my ass fat, but yeah. I love it.
That's desirable.
I love food.
Right?
That's my problem.
Yeah, it adds weight to the right spots, right?
Fat Project family, how's it going? Now, we have had so many different guests that have come onto our podcast, and we've talked about meat a lot. And the one thing that everybody that tries Piedmontese says is that it is some of the most tender steak they have ever had. I think, actually, Sean Baker came on and talked about the lack of connective tissue in the cattle.
Yeah, he broke it down scientifically, but he did.
That's the reason why when you, whatever cut you get, whether it's a ribeye, whether it's a flat iron, whether it's a bavette, no matter, when you cut into that steak after it's cooked, you're not getting any of that chewiness,
that gristle
that you have to spit out because you can't actually chew it. Piedmontese is super tender. They have great cuts that are low fat, high fat for whatever diet you're doing. They're just an overall amazing beef company. Andrew, how can they get it?
Yep. That's over at Piedmontese.com. That's PIEDMONTESE.com. At checkout, enter promo code POWER for 25% off your order. And if your order is $150 or more, you get free 2-day shipping. Again, Piedmontese.com, promo code POWER. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
Oh, yeah, right.
With the amount of people that are moving there.
True. California South.
California, yeah. 2.0, man.
That's it.
All right, we're rolling now.
So there's some sort of like butcher tournament going on, or what's going on here?
Yeah, it's the World Butchers Challenge. It's literally the Olympics of meat.
And what does that entail? A lot of knives and stuff?
A lot of knives, a lot of sharp pointy things, a lot of carcasses.
Have you been to this before?
I haven't. So the last one was held in 2018 in Ireland. And it was supposed to be in 2020. So they've been training for 4 years effectively waiting for this.
Wow.
So I'm emceeing it, and there's 13 teams from around the world.
You're the MC?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's fucking dope. Wow.
So I'm stoked for that.
So you got to give us like a rundown. Let's say Andrew's butcher. He's from Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And it's his third year competing. Like, give us some MC-ness.
So you actually have to be chosen for your national team. It's like an elite. So yeah, it's a thing, y'all.
How many countries?
13 on this one.
13?
Yeah, there were 16, but some had to still drop out.
Shit's
going to
be popping off over
there. Damn.
Yeah.
This is a big
deal. You thought it was a meat fest up in that bag. Wait till you head to downtown this weekend.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Dude, I want to go.
When did you start your business? Because you've been sending us some of the hardcore carnivore seasoning for a bit now, and it's amazing. Especially, we'll get into a little bit deeper, the camo, because that's incredible, especially for those people that have trouble eating game, meat, or liver.
Yep.
But how long have you had the business for?
Since 2016 is when I came out with the first one, and it was never an intention. You know, some people have an idea of like, this is what I'm going to do, and this is my business plan, and these are all the things I'm going to bring to market.
Passion.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely my passion, but I never, ever thought. It started as an earnest, you know what, I publish a lot of my recipes online, I have a cookbook, and I would like for people to taste how I think food should taste, but I'm not going to open a restaurant because no one's got time for that kind of overhead, right? Not in this economy. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would be really cool to come up with a seasoning. And I'd seen activated charcoal used in a lot of health food products. You know, they were using it in like diet shakes and things like that at the time. And I was really fascinated by what that would do to the color of meat, because a lot of people, myself included back in the day, have trouble cooking basic things. Like, how do you make a steak?
And that's what I was telling you about Smelly's Kitchen. That's the whole reason I started it. People didn't know what the hell's going on with cooking meat.
So the Hardcore Carnival Black was my first seasoning, and it's nearly like meat cosmetics, because if you don't know what you're cooking, you can see it there on those steaks. So it makes them look completely black and charred before you've even cooked them. And we do eat with our eyes. So especially if you're cooking to medium rare, it's a really nice contrast. So I put it out and I thought, if it goes south, everyone gets a Christmas present with my name on it. And here we are. All these years later, with several seasonings in the line, we have, I call them tools for serious meat enthusiasts. Just stuff that I use at home. It couldn't be a more organic. It's similar to you. It's ideas for things that you genuinely use and think will help people.
Try to make things a little easier. You're trying to make things taste a little better.
That's it.
Maybe it's easier for someone to stay on their diet. I found that your seasonings, they taste fucking amazing. The black one in particular, when I used it and made a post with like a hamburger, people were like, that's just a gimmick. It just turned the burger black. And I was like, what are they talking about? That's a gimmick. I don't understand what they're talking about. Like, it made the burger taste really good. That's why I used it. I wasn't trying to turn the burger some other color, but that's just naturally what's in that product, right?
Right. So, you know, the activated charcoal is less than 1% of the whole blend, and it's nearly like an added bonus, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I don't know if you guys could tell from my accent, but I'm not originally from America. Shocking.
What? That's it. Bring this podcast in.
I was totally fooled.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I sound just like it. I think growing up in Australia, having a smaller population, we have a lot of what I would describe as kind of cleaner foods. Mm-hmm. There's not as much food service emphasis on making things last longer, all of that. And our flavors on the whole are just simpler. And I think that's what the hallmark of the Hardcore Carnival line is, that it is seasoning, but it's subtle and it's enhancing rather than like a in-your-face seasoning line, you know?
You know, the really funny thing, though, is when we got these, right, Mark, you sent them to Mark and he gave them out. And I went home. I was like, God damn, this is good seasoning. I need to go find like the Instagram or whatever. I need to go find this. And then I saw you. And in the United States, there's a trend with people of Mark's complexion, white people, that they cannot season food or that they do not season enough. And that like literally it's like, and I've had the personal experience of eating food from your people and they don't generally season their food really, really well. So when I saw your face, I was like, what? Like, what the fuck? Like, she did this? Like, it's so fucking good and flavorful. And it's like, and it makes sense you're not from America though. It's the Australia, right?
You thought it would be like some southern barbecue type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, man. No. It's good.
Thank you. I mean, I wouldn't put out shit that I don't use in my own kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I have to like it if I'm going to eat it, you know? So I appreciate that. I think that's the thing at the end of the day. You know, anyone who says it's a gimmick, like, sure, that's a one bottle purchase. The fact that we're still in business and that's still the number one best like activated charcoal selling rub in the world, I think speaks to how it tastes.
Do the other products have charcoal in it as well or no?
No, it's just that one. And that one we call our beef rub. It's really, it looks great on any red meat just because of the contrast. And the red seasoning, which you have in front of you, is basically nearly the same formula, just with a little bit more heat. But I designed it for pork and chicken just because the black didn't look appealing. And we eat with our eyes first. Otherwise, you just dump everything into a trough, right?
And is there are your products like gluten-free and free of like a bunch of junk and things like that as well? Or
So they are all gluten-free, they are all MSG-free, although honestly I want to come out with an MSG seasoning because there's nothing wrong with MSG and it's one of those
tastes
like
awesome
maligned amino acids. That's a dry tip. So I try and keep, there are some that are cleaner than others, but at the end of the day, like, I make them for how they taste. Mm. So I'm concerned about the quality of ingredients as well, for sure. But it just so happens that they also are very suitable for a lot of folks watching, you know, on certain diets or watching, you know, calories or macros or whatever.
Do you have a top secret one that you're working on right now?
I'm not shitting you. I want to do this MSG one.
What?
Like, it's going to piss people off too.
What, under what kind of flavor profile? Like, what are you thinking?
So we have I'm shooting my shot a little early here because it's literally an R&D, but, there's in barbecue, there's a blend called SPG. It's just salt, pepper, garlic, just for people who want to start off as a basic, you know, blend, coarse pepper. So I want to do a MSG. Just like at a base level, if you want to kick your food up a little bit, without introducing too many other flavors. Cause like I said, you know, salt and MSG are enhancers. They're not flavors. Mm. So they work to sort of activate and wake up your taste buds. So you have a heightened sense of taste, which I think is really neat. So it's basically you doing all the work.
What's the bad from MSG? Like, what's the bad rap that it's gotten? Like, what's the reason for that?
You know, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, I think it's one of those things where people have just been misinformed about it. They're scared of it. They don't know it. Mm. I came from an urban city. I had no agricultural background whatsoever. Didn't know how to cook a steak. I'm now about to finish a graduate certificate in meat science because I got so into it. And what I'm realizing as someone who didn't have a science brain is it's so hard to explain the science behind things to people who don't have any kind of context. And so the thing with MSG is, I think, unfortunately, it's also, just to be honest with you, I think it's tied to a lot of racism because it's traditionally used in Chinese food. Mm. But more so, it's just a protein. It's a, you know, it's a glutamate. So tomatoes, seaweed, all of these like yummy kind of meaty things are high in glutamates, which is a derivative, or MSG is a derivative of that. So technically it is an amino, it is a protein, so you could have an allergy to it, but they've never been able to establish it in any tests either.
What have they tried to say that it does though? Because I remember specifically when I was a younger kid, all these Asian restaurants, it's always no MSG.
Yeah.
So what was the claim of what MSG does?
So there are some people who claim to have an allergy in that, I think it's not that it's anaphylaxis or anything. I think they claim sort of hives or like a tight jaw or something like that. Mm. And the rest of the people have no idea. They just think it's bad. It's just the sheep situation of like, yikes. Mm. So I say it with, you know, dihydrogen monoxide, right? Sounds pretty scary.
Yeah.
Until you figure out that it's
what's
water.
It entail to be a meat scientist? I think I must be three quarters of the way there.
I reckon you are too. You know, they do a lot of work on, there's a lot of stuff that goes into meat even before it hits wherever you're buying it, whether it's a big grocery store or a small processor. Mm-hmm. The genetics, the water holding capacity, the pH level at the time of slaughter, how that affects water holding, how that affects tenderness, safety, brines, injections, obviously things like cured meats and what have you. So they do all of the research into that.
Do you know? Oh, were you about to say?
I was just saying, it's fun, yeah. Honestly.
I'm curious because, okay, I'm a simple person when I cook my meat. I use an air fryer. And it comes out perfect every time with this Ninja air fryer thing. But is there a legitimate difference between meat on the grill?
Meat on the smoker, for sure.
Meat on the smoker?
Fuck yeah. It's night and day difference.
Yeah. So what, like, you know all this meat stuff way more than I do and more than them too. So, like, why would someone want to cook meat on a smoker or something else than something like an air fryer in terms of simplicity?
It changes the flavor profile. So the way that you guys consume protein, at some stage, it just has to be about the sheer needing to get it in your body. Mm-hmm. And that's completely understandable. But, you know, for a lot of people, and yourselves included, there will be times where you're like, you know what, I want to get a little fancy. It's not just a standard, like, I need to feed myself on a Wednesday night. Like, yeah. Let me see if I can develop different flavors. So you get different flavors in the smoker. You get different flavors on the grill. And even frying, it produces different compounds. That's what happens. Different reactions and different aminos form and different flavors, literally different flavors.
There's a new ninja out there, by the way.
Wait, really?
I saw it the other day. I saw a commercial for it.
What?
It was mind-boggling. It's like seven things in one. Look it up. It's a smoker. It's a regular grill. It's an air fryer. It'll fucking do your laundry. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but don't you hate when they do too many things?
Nah. I do, yeah.
It
can get confusing. You're right.
It's like my dishwasher, man. I only have one setting, right? How many times have you used all the settings on your dishwasher? Right.
Does anybody even know what they mean?
No idea.
Yeah, I guess so you don't get spots on your wine glass or something, maybe.
Right.
I always go turbo on that thing because there is a turbo button. I just think that's better than whatever is normal.
Turbo on everything.
Is it a ninja foodie, Mark? Or is it just like a...
Yeah, it's a ninja foodie thing, yeah.
Okay, let me have a find it.
By the way, what you guys hear is chomping on is Mark has a meat bag of carnivore crisps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are good. Delicious. Yeah.
You got pork, elk. What else you got in there?
I think I have round steak.
Oh, that's a great one for that.
Yeah. Very lean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This stuff's good. Y'all should send more. But anyway, yeah, this stuff's really good.
What?
It's quite delicious.
Hard to find.
What do you do for exercise?
So I do, because of the pandemic, I had to end up setting stuff up in my garage. So I have a TRX and I have bands and I have a treadmill and I just try and do a lot of like resistance stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was very clear to me as I got older that it's important to maintain now to be like healthy and happy later in life too. And just try and do that. Just try and move more than anything else. So, I work in a male dominated field, so it's important to be able to like lift my shit. You know, I need to be able to get in my truck. I need to be able to pick up that big ass piece of meat and not be a little weakling about it. So it is important to me to keep that up too.
You said you got into some hunting recently?
Yeah, when I moved. So
like a requirement in Texas, right?
Yeah, I just felt like a big fucking hypocrite because I would see like, you know, suburbs of Austin, there are deer that like walk around the neighborhoods. Oh, they're so cute. Yeah. Like, but I eat them. Like there's got to be some kind of middle ground here. So I'd already visited some commercial abattoirs and slaughterhouses and I just felt like it was something I needed to do, both to, you know, stamp my Texas card, but also... Just as part of being a carnivore, and I did it for the first time, loved it, and I go hunting every year. But the difference is that I process all of my own deer from start to finish, all the way myself. So, I think that's for me personally part of the bigger thing. And I'm not in it for the trophies. So most of the time, I'm going after does, which taste better anyway.
Mm. And you never hunted when you were a kid? Never did any of that stuff?
No, Australia has a really different relationship. They do have hunting there, but it's very marginal and not mainstream. Mm-hmm. We don't really have any guns there either. So
okay,
it's a whole thing.
So what got you so interested in meat in general? Was it like stuff as a kid, the way your family cooked? Was it a transition later in life? What was it?
It was actually a visit to Texas. Just as a tourist, because when you go, everyone's like, you gotta eat the barbecue, you gotta eat, right? It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And I'd always love eating steak as a kid. Like, I always loved lamb chops, like loved meat, but didn't really know how to cook it, didn't know how to choose it, didn't know the difference with cuts. Like, even what you said about eye of round, a lot of people be like, what? I don't get it. And literally it was going to Texas, trying barbecue for the first time, being obsessed with it because you know how good smoked food tastes, right?
It's amazing, yeah.
And I would go back and then want to learn more about how it was made. Mm. And in learning about how barbecue was made and like why is the brisket that I'm trying to buy in Australia nothing like the brisket in the United States, it like unlocked this whole rabbit's hole of beef breeds and butchery and meat and cuts and selecting them. And oh, that's not blood, that's myoglobin. And I'm like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome. And I found what I was passionate about.
What do you think the difference is in meat in Australia versus here? I've noticed a difference myself. I've been there before, and I've just heard many people talk about that as well. And what are some of the major differences, you think?
The biggest difference on the briskets that I was looking at the time was the size. So they traditionally slaughtered younger in Australia, and just the genetics are bigger in the States. The animals are bigger here. So, but the biggest difference was the butchery, which is interesting for what's happening this weekend, because different countries cut animals up in different ways because they want different cuts out of it.
Even here in the United States, it's like, I think it's like more available now. Mm-hmm. But years ago, when I tried to get a tri-tip, I couldn't find one out here in California. Like, nobody knew what I was talking about.
Which is so weird because this is the most popular state for tri-tip.
Right.
In this, you know, the Santa Maria kind of Bay Area.
Right.
Where it's from.
Right, yeah. Wow.
But it's supply and demand of popularity. And now I think consumers are more aware than ever before of different cuts and what to ask for. But the other biggest difference, I think, between US and Australia is Australia has a lot of grass-fed product, which is just because we have a lot of quality grass, too. So it's the same as, you know, knowing good dairy comes from Vermont. California, of course, has a lot of dairy, too, but... You know, being in
cheese
drought.
From Wisconsin and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And it's like anything, you know, the better the environment for it, the better quality product you'll get, which is why, you know, there's a lot of grain fed beef here, which is great because of the areas it comes out of, and just got to pick and choose it.
What are some maybe sleeper steaks that people don't know about?
Oh, I love this. All right. So the first thing is you can't just buy a steak and hope that it's going to eat like a filet, all right? So if you like your meat to eat like marshmallows, just don't stop listening now because you should never stop listening, but just ignore this part because it's useless to you. I love skirt steaks, but there's two skirt steaks and one of them is really tender and one of them is really not. So if you can get your hands on an outside skirt, there's a muscle called the teres major. So I don't know if you're like this too, but one of the things that I get really creepy about is I know where all these same muscles are on us too.
Do you ever like, do that? I'm eating a rotator cuff.
Right, exactly.
I'll pass. Exactly. I'm good, thank you.
I'm just worried about my. I'm worried about him. Shit.
He's all right. So teres major's off of the scapula. That's one of the most tender ones. So is the flat iron, which comes off the top blade roast. They're the second most tender after the tenderloin, but really full of flavor because they're out of the chuck, which is up in the shoulder. Flap or bavette steak is a great one, yeah, especially for fajitas.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's another favorite of mine.
Have you had an opportunity to try Piedmontese steaks?
I have. They're so interesting.
Yeah, and the bavette is amazing from there. It kind of, you eat it a little bit like a filet, like it's really... tender, even though it's super lean.
Do you know about that breed? Like what the deal with it is?
Yeah, I know a little bit about it, but maybe you can explain more. I don't know as much as you.
Yeah, educate us, please.
So it's a genetic mutation of the myostatin gene, and it's basically double muscled. Mm-hmm. So that it has double as many muscle fibers, but that means it has but the same amount of connective tissue. So overall, you're getting a bigger steak that appears to be leaner, or sorry, less tough, and it is leaner,
right?
Because you get more muscle fiber but less connective tissue. So they're a really cool kind of
jacked
animal for that.
Fucking jacked cows.
They are
they can like hurt themselves is what when I went out to Piedmontese, they were explaining that to me. They're like they have so much muscle on them and they can move so powerfully that they can actually hurt themselves.
Yeah.
It's like damn.
It's wild. It's wild. And they look like, you know, they look like they're shredded for competition.
Yeah, bodybuilders.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any more steaks, like some hidden steaks?
I think eye of round is actually a really good one. It's very low in fat. It is a tougher steak, though.
Yeah, I would use it for jerky more than anything because it's one of those ones where just because it has the name steak doesn't mean that you're going to get a great steak-y experience out of it. That's also the cut that you're most likely. Have you ever seen that rainbow on the surface of meat? You
know how yes. Yes.
That it's a light refraction deal because the muscle fibers are so tightly knit on that particular cut as well. Oh. So, especially on roast beef and stuff like that.
So the meat's not bad. It's just a.
It's called birefringence. It's just a light refraction deal. Yeah. So it's kind of I don't know. I like all that nerdy shit. You know. Those are my big ones. Honestly, ribeye is probably my favorite that doesn't need any help, but. Sirloin steaks are up there for me. I love them. Top sirloins like culotte, rump cap. I think that they've got a great chew, great flavor. Love them. And they're good price.
Ribeye cap is amazing.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Yeah. Have you ever bought a whole ribeye roll and just taken the cap off?
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, that's really good. It's like a loaf.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a big loaf.
And then you can give other people the rest of the ribeyes and they don't really know that you've taken the cap off and keep it for yourself.
It's called something different though, right?
The cap?
Like the roast, right? It's called
rib roast.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it has something a whole like, bunch of different. I mean, mm-hmm. prime rib's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know,
right? Like a prime rib roast is basically a bunch of ribeye. Like once you chop it up, it's a bunch of ribeyes, right?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. There's actually a meat guide. So in the industry, we speak in numbers. So there's 107s, 103s. Like how much is left on? How much is trimmed down? Oh. And you get all the way down to individual steaks. So that's the other really confusing thing: the barrier to entry to meat. Different names for the same fucking thing.
Oh, what about ribs? We need to talk about ribs.
All right, let's talk
ribs
about
are
it.
Amazing. What kind of ribs? Like what are good tender ribs?
Are you talking about beef ribs or pork ribs or any ribs?
Beef.
So I mean chuck and plate ribs, so that just depends where they come from on the animal, but it's the same muscle. It's still serratus ventralis. Do you ever have Denver steaks?
No.
I don't believe so.
That's the same muscle too, just up in the chuck as well. The only ribs that I'm not a huge fan of are probably back ribs because you're getting a lot of the intercostals there. So you get like the connective muscle, but you don't get a lot of like bang for buck muscle, but it's also why they're cheaper. So if your favorite thing is just gnawing on bones, I would go with a back rib.
That's unfortunate. when people are preparing steaks, whatever they're doing, what are some things that they need to try to do to make sure that they always end up with a good steak? Like for example, you know, maybe not making it well done, but letting it sit and stuff like that. When I was younger, I never had patience. So once my steak was done, I'd just go into it and be like, why isn't this the right way? Then someone told me about letting it sit. And I was like, wow.
How do you cook your steaks? Like, what do you cook them to?
Okay. First, let me just give... what I cook it to? I usually like them rare or medium rare.
Okay.
Because I actually do. Yeah. My girlfriend likes her steaks well done.
I know, girl.
I like how everyone's like,
I know. Everyone's shins just banged into something. Right?
But she also doesn't have patience. So okay. She's just like, let it sit. Because she will eat anything as long as it's just like done. Anyway, but I'll usually like, I have some marinades. So I let it marinate, I let it sit. Mm-hmm. Then before I cook it, I don't know why. Maybe I saw it on a YouTube video or maybe, I don't know. But I let it come to room temperature before I put it in the air fryer. Mm-hmm. Little air fryer has a little stick that you can make sure it gets to that temperature. So It cooks. I open it up. I let it sit. And it always just comes out tasting good. But that's just like because I'm a simple bro.
No, I mean, listen, fried shit tastes good. That's why we like it, right? Yeah.
But actually, quick question. Do you know why the air fryer, it's called frying? Because you just put it in and it's just, it's not frying, right?
Do you know why a pellet grill is called a grill? Because it's not a grill, it's just smoking.
Okay, yeah.
It's the same shit.
Yeah.
It's a convection oven. Your air fryer is effectively a convection oven. Okay. So, but it gets to such high temperatures that it can recreate those same flavor compounds that you get from frying as well.
Okay.
So... you know, dumb it down for the people, which is where the whole MSG thing comes back into play. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, that's just how it is. It's like uncured bacon is cured.
How do people avoid?
Uncured bacon is cured. I'm trying to remember the last time I had uncured bacon because I can't remember the flavors. But what?
You knew that, right?
Yeah, all bacon's cured.
Yeah.
It's already like basically cooked, right?
So why is it called uncured bacon?
I mean, you can eat it.
No, you can't eat it out of the packet.
Mm.
It's not cooked to safe temperatures. It's just cured.
Mm.
So, I mean, you can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't.
Yeah. Mm.
Because it's a labeling loophole. So they use celery seed, which has high level of natural nitrates in it, to do the curing instead of manufactured nitrate.
Yeah, it has like more nitrates than...
We get 80% of our nitrates from vegetables and then 15% from water.
Yeah, celery root has more nitrates than probably what they normally use.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
So
buy the regular bacon.
Just buy it's the same and it's cheaper.
Good cool. to know.
Yeah.
Tastes amazing too.
Yeah.
But real quick before we keep going, is there anything else people can do to make sure they have a good steak?
Yes. Number one is pat it dry before you cook it. So that crust that you probably love on it that your air fryer gets, that is like the hallmark for me of a great steak. Like, I don't want sear marks. I don't know if you're like that. You know, the grill marks? I don't want that. I want crust the whole way through. So that crust is like, I know I'm banging my head against the wall here, but it's the development of different flavor compounds. It's called the Maillard reaction. It's what happens when reducing sugars, enzymatic reaction between reducing sugars and amino acids. And it's the same thing that makes bread smell so good when it bakes in the oven. It's, I know. R.I.P. to carbs. So it's one of those great things that it just smells great and it has all these great flavor compounds. Now that happens in the absence of moisture. So like when you load up a pan, when you're trying to like fry off some ground beef and it never gets brown because the water starts coming out of the beef and the pan's not hot enough, same thing. So if you pat your steak dry, you're already putting it ahead of the game to start developing that Maillard reaction, which is going to give you that great crust on it. And just real quick, when it comes to resting, so that's purely personal preference because there's some people who like their steak hot and there's some people who would rather their steak be juicy, and that's the choice you're making.
I've recently said fuck letting my steak rest because dude, there's not enough time. So I just
how about letting it rest for 5 minutes? It's still warm.
By the time I'm done cutting my son's steak, like I'm good to go. Like I want that shit hot.
Okay. What about letting the steak sit out for a while before you cook it?
It can help. It's not so. I guess one of the misnomers is that it comes up to room temperature, and it doesn't. The core of the steak will never come up to room temperature, and you're also playing a little bit with food safety if you leave it out for too long.
How long is too long?
3 hours. Okay. If you're in an hour zone, you're fine. You can also dry brine it. So you can unwrap your steak and put it on a rack, like just buy it, like a cooling rack or a baking rack, salt it and put it back in the fridge uncovered. And that'll also help dry out the surface. You'll get a totally different steak that way. The salt will also draw the moisture out. Turn it into a brine, and then if you leave it for long enough, it'll go back into the steak. So you'll get a deeper seasoning all the way through.
How long should you leave it?
You can do it for 24 or 48 hours like that. And what I like to tell folks who do it with Hardcore Carnival Black is do a little bit of salt to do that, and then do the application of the seasoning right before you cook it. Because it's just, there's a conversion from muscle to meat, and meat remains biodynamic. It's pretty much a zombie, if you think about it.
Nice.
Just want to really freak people out.
Eating some zombies. I like it.
Well, think about the color change, right?
Yeah.
So it still has these bioavailabilities that can happen even post-mortem, that, and everything that we choose to do to it, like leaving it out. I think what leaving it out mainly does is takes the chill off of it. So if it sweats and then you pat it dry, you're going to get an even better sear. Mm. So
yeah, I probably leave mine out mine's out for a while because a lot of times I will take it out the night before and I will let it thaw from the freezer. And then sometimes I forget and I come home and I cook it. My house is pretty cold, but I don't know. I'm fine.
You have an iron stomach.
I'm indestructible.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. We also still have a pretty good food system.
It's still packaged and everything. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Yeah. You probably do have really good gut biome.
And I probably have a lot of worms that are like fighting each other or whatever.
Yeah, they're like,
it's awesome.
They're stoked.
Like, keep feeding me that rotten meat. It's great.
You know what? Actually, let's kind of go down this path a little bit because there's a lot of bros that listen to this podcast and we probably do some bad shit. So what do we need to be? Nah, man. Sometimes I'll leave that sushi grade fish out to defrost and I get home like, fuck it. I'm going to eat it. And it's been on the counter defrosted for like 6 hours and it's fish. That's not a good idea. Yeah. Or, still do it.
Or while I'm cooking, I have blood on my hands. I'll just wipe it off. I'm not like, whatever. Really watch. Yeah. And then I'll like, oh,
I'll say most food.
Yeah. What blood?
Well, sorry. Chicken. Whatever the blood like looking substance that comes out of the package.
That's water.
Yeah. Okay, there it is.
That's water colored with myoglobin.
Okay, so
that's what you're talking about.
That stuff on my hands.
I know,
I'm
the worst
sure
at parties, by the way. No, no, I just kill everyone's.
Yeah, the blood is supposedly like a protein kind of thing, right? Amino acid or something like that.
Yeah, well, the blood's drained during slaughter. So that stuff in the packages, especially vacuum seal, is called purge. It's literally just cellular water that's colored by a protein called myoglobin. That's it.
So is that color, because I had brought this up on the podcast a long time ago. Is that color there for like the store front to make the steak look red instead of that like grayish pale color? Or is
it
something
naturally
different?
In there.
Yeah.
That's
the color of meat. That's the color of muscle.
It's just coming out because it's getting warm.
But there's things that they can do to it to hold that color so it looks better for longer. Okay. So the steak actually might have started to turn and it'll still look good. And that's not they don't inject it or die. It's like, so if you think about it, right, what changes the color and what makes it, it starts off as a dark purple, it goes to a bright cherry red, which is what we like as consumers the best, and when it starts to turn or oxidize, it goes to methemoglobin brown. One thing that we know that makes that change happen is oxygen. So it's oxidizing, right? There's an iron heme in it. That's why blood tastes irony. So it's just, it's basically rusting, for lack of a better word.
I've eaten a lot of gray meat in my time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So.
That happens when you're broke. When I used to be broke, I'd eat fucking, you know, the I don't know, 60% off beef that was just sitting, you know, you knew it was like on its last leg.
So, you know what? Here's the thing about that and your bro question. It's not that it's bad for you. It's just when it oxidizes, it can start to develop some off flavors.
And but smells,
right. But, you know, it's, you know how sometimes when you warm stuff up in the microwave, like meat in the microwave, and you're like, it's got that flavor to it?
Yeah.
That's the same thing. And the weird thing is some people like that flavor. Mm. We call it warmed over.
Yeah.
And it's also a hallmark of the beginnings of Rancid.
The beginning of the end. You're eating a dead zombie.
Yeah. It's an acquired taste.
When that zombie starts to taste a little fishy, that's when it's like you can be like, all right, we can throw this out, right? Because like I've had some steaks where somebody got like a really good deal and I'm like, you got a good deal because this shit's bad. Like that's bad, right?
I shouldn't say this because I'm worried for your bros, but... realistically, you can, as long as you cook it, especially the way that your girlfriend likes it, it'll always be safe to eat.
Right.
It just won't taste good because these other bad flavor compounds will have developed, but you won't get sick from it because you've cooked it to a safe temperature.
Yeah, no smoker is going to cover that fishiness though. It's fucking gross.
Is it true that oh, fuck, I forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry, Mark.
I do that all the time.
God damn, I missed it. It'll come back to me at some point.
It's all right.
Any other safety precautions? Anything else? Like, anything.
Buy a meat thermometer. So you know what you were talking about? Mm-hmm. That's what you're using in your air fryer. Mm-hmm. It's great for food safety. And I'm not trying to bore people. I get it. Whatever. Like, eat steak tartare. I don't give a shit. It's your body. Put whatever you want into it. The thing is, I really don't give a shit. I give a shit about what I eat, right?
Yeah.
You do you. It's cool. So, but... food safety aside, if you want to know when your steak is ready and perfectly cooked, use a meat thermometer. Mm-hmm. 130 to 135 is medium rare every time. And none of this kind of guessing, pressing bullshit.
It's idiot proof. It truly is. Yeah. When I was younger, I didn't have a meat thermometer, so I'd always be playing the guessing game. I'd take it off. It was too cooked. I'd take it off. It was too rare.
You don't want to be the guy that chops it open midway through either.
Yeah, because Instagram will kill you. Yeah. But in regards to the meat thermometers, do you think it's too, like, it's bad to rely on it too much to kind of have some knowledge of when you know, that's probably good enough right now?
It's kind of training wheels, like anything. And that's the thing with barbecue, and especially the rise of craft barbecue and how obsessed people have got with it. It really is by feel. And you're talking about a natural product that, as much science as we apply to it, there's still going to be exceptions to the rules.
Yeah.
Just like how you can train five people doing the same exercise and they're all going to come out looking different at the end of it, right? So I think it's one of those things where it's a great training wheel to start off with, and then you can sort of get a sense of that was actually, 2 degrees more than it should have been, but it looks the same as the other one. Mm-hmm. And you'll start with anything with repetition you get good at, I think.
Yeah. What about, if you do, I forgot if it's reverse sear or whatever, but if my steak's at 120, is that good to crank the smoker up and start getting a good flame through to kind of get that crust over the top?
What smoker do you have that's flaming?
I have a Pit Boss.
So you have a pellet grill.
Yeah. So it has that it's called a sear slide. So you open it up and the actual cup at the bottom that gets full of pellets just fucking ignites and it goes
just get a fucking charcoal grill, dude. Just man up.
So but that's the thing though. So along with that, that's why I'm like, if I pull out my meat pro with where I was some other hardcore dudes are fucking grilling, are they gonna make fun of me just having a fucking pellet smoker?
No one's gonna make fun of you for using a meat thermometer. I still use them.
She lies. Yeah, I know. She lies.
right after I just got clowned on.
Yeah, I'm using an air fryer, bro. I am at the lowest of the low when it comes to anybody here.
Yeah,
right,
but
now
you're 6'3", 240.
Charcoal works really good though.
Yeah.
You get really good flavor from charcoal, but it is a little harder. to like figure out.
But you can control it, right? I'm sure that I'm not the one to do it, but I'm sure there's some parable to workouts and lifting here as well, which is like, when you use a machine that does it for you, you're limited by what that machine lets you do. But when you're on charcoal, I can pile the coals up. I can spread them around. I can have entire control over the heat. And so you get to be a better cook by having better control that
way. I was going to say, is it true that food poisoning happens more often in the home than anywhere else?
Yeah.
Like you poison yourself, basically, and then someone blames the restaurant down the street?
Well, there's also different windows. So it can happen in up to 72 hours, and a lot of people don't know that. They think it's 24, so they blame something else when it was really them. And most of the time, it goes undiagnosed and unreported.
Right.
So it's a whole thing.
Yeah, sometimes somebody gets really wiped out from it, and other times it's like just not that bad.
A little diarrhea and you're out.
Yeah.
I've probably had a lot of food poisoning. I'm just being real. I think I've had a lot of recent food poisoning with this fish I've been eating. And I just haven't known.
Did you end up with some double dragon?
Dog,
I mean, that's the worst.
I've been buying sushi grade fish, and like I freeze it, and I'll sometimes defrost it, and it sometimes gets defrosted too long. We just mentioned this, and sometimes I have bubble gut, but I have an iron stomach just like you. So
I think,
through it.
I think this is called aging, right?
Yeah.
You're aging your meat.
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
What's the deal with aged meat?
That's the thing. It's controlled decomposition.
But it's in a cold environment, right?
Yes. It shouldn't be out on your
porch.
just to be clear.
It's on his roof.
Yeah.
90 degree heat. No big deal.
Yeah. See how you're making fish jerky.
It's
that's
in his car.
Cool. It should be done. So listen, the deal with dry aging, it should be done in a controlled environment. It should ultimately be in its own fridge. There's a lot more things that can go wrong with dry aging than any other meat cooking. So it's not like hey, I'm going to throw this steak in the back of my fridge and cross my fingers. Like, that's not a fucking good idea, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's basically everything that we do to meat to promote tenderness is trying to undo rigor mortis. So you're basically trying to let the natural enzymes of the meat break down some of those actin-myosin bonds that are basically flexing the muscle. And so it becomes more tender. The difference so when you vacuum seal something, that's wet aging automatically. As long as you don't freeze it, freezing stops the aging process. So if you were to buy a ribeye roll in a vacuum seal, you could leave it like that for 2 weeks. That'll be an extra 2 weeks of aging. It will enhance the meat. It will continue to tenderize it. The difference with dry aging is you can get other flavors develop just like a cheese, you like blue cheese. So some people introduce certain molds to try and get those nutty, funky flavors as well. He's obsessed with it. He got pissed at me the other day. He's like, you haven't put any steak in the dry ager for ages. So I had to do that this week too.
What about taking some steak like out of the package and putting some of your hardcore carnivore seasoning on it and then like maybe, let's say, leave it in the fridge for 2-3 days or something like that? How does that come out? Like almost like a marinade, but like a rub? Or is that something you would advise, or is that not a good idea?
It's personal preference. I don't like to do that just because I feel like, you know, we talked about how salt's a flavor enhancer and the rest of them are delicate spices and they change they lose potency. So especially in a refrigerated environment, that's why we don't store spices.
And then you kind of burn them when you cook sometimes too, right?
You can. Yeah. I personally don't mind that flavor. That's why I'll put it on beforehand. But I just don't like what can happen to like the more fragrant spices like garlic and onion when they just sit in the fridge. They nearly get muted. Right. But it's personal preference. Like I rarely put like a wet marinade on my steaks just because I really like to get that dry crust. So,
I had two questions. I was wondering, Andrew mentioned the Piedmontese and you have experience of cooking it, but when we first got Piedmontese years ago, we were like, damn, I overcooked it a few times because I was like, it cooks way faster than normal steaks that I get, right? So number one, why does it cook faster? And number two, like, do you find that you need to cook them slightly differently than you do when you cook other meat?
Yeah, you do, and dry aging is the same because it's had such water loss as well that it'll feel different when it's done to like a normal steak.
Yeah.
With the Piedmontese, I would imagine that as part of that genetic profile, it just has less water holding capacity potentially. So it's still tender. Do you notice it being, and this is not a detriment, but do you notice it maybe not as juicy as other steaks, or is that still there for you?
No, the juiciness is there. It's just when I was cooking it initially, I'd cook it for the same time and it'd end up being way more cooked. So when I cook it correctly, it's still juicy. It's still tender. There's no issues there. It just cooks faster than like a ribeye that I would get at Costco or something like that.
It's honestly probably just the double muscle factor. So you've got twice as many muscle fibers in there. It's going to react differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the second question I had, and this might sound pretty stupid, but is there a certain amount of time you can just keep frozen meat, or can it just be frozen perpetually and 2 years later you can pull it out, defrost it, cook it, and you're good?
Yep. Pretty much.
Okay.
So you will have some quality loss the longer it goes. And you can technically defrost and refreeze as long as you're keeping it food safe. Like, so you throw it in your fridge and then you change your mind. So then it goes back into the freezer and back and forth. Every time you do that, you're going to affect quality, but not safety. And it's just a water holding capacity. And when I say that, it's a fancy way of saying how juicy it's going to end up being at the end.
Okay.
And the only other thing that can affect it is if it starts getting freezer burn, which is usually going to be from your vacuum seal or whatever you've got it packaged in being compromised and there being oxygen in there. And that is the frozen version of oxidative rancidity. So you'll start to get bad flavors and it'll also have a really bad texture because it'll be really dry.
Do you mess around with making your own jerky, or have you played around with that before?
Yeah, yeah.
How does someone do that?
Especially with venison. You know, there's so many tough muscles, tough lean muscles on there. You can buy a pretty inexpensive dehydrators. And I take it nearly all the way there, and I usually finish it off in the oven at 160 for a couple of minutes after that just to hit it with the extra bacteria factor. And I usually also save those, you know, those little silica packets you get in random things. I save those for when I make jerky and throw that in the Ziploc because
those things drive me crazy. They're everywhere.
I know, but like you may as well upcycle them for yourself, right?
What do they do actually? Do they just
supposed to keep stuff fresh or something?
It's a dryer, so it attracts the moisture, and so it'll keep that jerky drier because mold is going to grow when there's moisture there. So it keeps it less moldy for longer. Hardcore Carnivore, Tex-Mex, and Michelada, which is our chili lime, is bomb on jerky.
Yeah, the Michelada.
And camo is too, actually.
The Michelada one's really good.
Thank you.
I like that. The camo works really good. I've been using it on my liver.
How do you prepare it? Like, because I don't eat that much liver.
It's prepared just by being chopped up and frozen.
Okay.
So it's not cooked. It's just, but it has the camo on there, and I pull it out of the freezer, and I let it thaw for a little bit, and I just eat it just like that.
All right.
It's actually,
and you can keep doing that.
It actually, like, I think it's fucking awesome. But
if you were gonna make liver taste good, what would you do?
So there's an idea behind wild game that you can soak it in milk to get rid of some of the gaminess, and the concept behind that is that you're introducing a different pH level, and that can change the flavor again. So you could try soaking it in some kind of dairy.
Yeah.
For a little bit and seeing how that goes to change pH and change the flavor.
Yeah. What's a little bit? Like how long?
I mean, a couple hours maybe in the fridge.
Okay.
Blend up some liver, chuck it in your milk.
Yeah. No, I'm going to try that.
He's going to be like, I don't know why my milk curdled on my rooftop next to my fish. It's just weird.
Y'all, I'm not that wild, okay? It's on my counter in the house. Sometimes the house gets hot. Okay? You know, you're not wasting good fish. No, it might be bad. Not wasting it. Huh? I can deal with it.
That's cool. Get it? I get it.
Yeah. You know, being somebody that, you know, made these products and stuff like that, do you, when you're at home, do you cook stuff like real conveniently, real easily, or do you get way into it?
I think it's both. Like, so for my job, I do recipe developing. Mm-hmm. So I'm constantly cooking things and you know, doing recipes and all kinds of stuff.
Sometimes you're
like
just
that.
Set in chill mode. You just fucking 100% order pizza.
Yeah, that happens for sure sometimes. Yeah.
You're just like, I'm tired of all this. I just want to order some pizza.
This video is going to make you guys super hungry.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, man.
Yeah. Are they the Scotch eggs?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, those are incredible.
So they have soft-boiled eggs on the inside.
Yeah, they're
so good.
And
smoked sausage on the outside.
What?
Yeah, so I brought this one up because, like, other than, like, just a traditional, like, steak, like, what else do you like to, like, what else is some of your favorite things to make?
I really like making, I've been on a lot of trips to Mexico and I've been really inspired by Mexican food. So I like messing with like the salsas and stuff like that. Chili roasting, fire roasting, all that kind of stuff too.
Talk about food porn.
Yeah. Right? Fucking right. Salivating, man.
That
the
shit's
fuck?
So good.
Wow. That was definitely a fun recipe.
That might have just been porn.
That's seriously not okay.
That happens a lot too. God. No, I use the seasonings at home and I cook. There are nights that I'm chill about it and there are nights.
And Sam is going to fall down. He's getting weak in the legs.
No, I haven't eaten anything today. This is the fucked up thing that I'll do on this podcast. We always pull up food.
My bad.
Mm-hmm. No.
This shit was so good.
This looks fucking amazing.
They were pretty good, not going to lie. They were tasty.
Power Project family, how's it going? Now, I want to talk to you guys about Within You Supplements. This is Mark's supplement line. And the amazing thing is Mark used to be 330 pounds. He was a fat guy. So obviously, this stuff tastes really damn good. But another cool thing about Within You Supplements is that none of these products are white labeled. Now, what a lot of people do when they come out with their own supplement lines is they do something called white labeling. And white labeling, all that means is there's a supplement that's already out there. They take off the tag of that supplement. They put their name on it. And now it's their supplement. Line. Quite literally, there's nothing else like Within You Supplements out there because Mark formulated these supplements with other individuals that he knows within the industry, like Joel Green, who we've had on this podcast. So you guys should check out Within You. We have amazing whey protein, electrolyte supplements. We have fasting gum and many other things on the website. Andrew, how can they check it out?
Yes, that's over at markbellslingshot.com. And at checkout, enter promo code POWERPROJECT10 to save 10% off your entire order. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
But actually, I was going to ask the Tex-Mex seasoning. If somebody has that, what would you suggest they try cooking that? Like, just try that seasoning on.
So I use it if I'm making any kind of tacos or fajitas. So if I'm doing ground meat, I throw a bunch in as taco seasoning. I'll do that flap or bavette steak or skirt steak for fajitas. I use it even on like cast iron seared chicken breasts because it'll give, like, if you were going to put that chicken in like a taco salad or something, it just gives you that Tex-Mex flavor.
Yeah.
That's become probably like our second used, Black's the most used seasoning in our house.
On that note, yes. So many people that listen in love to cook ground beef. And it's like everyone that makes ground beef has their different way, but it's just like, it ends up just being this meat that doesn't, the texture sucks, doesn't taste that great. What do you think is a good way to prepare ground beef so it's actually pleasurable?
What you have? I need more info.
Need
here.
More info.
I so need a to lot know of what's going wrong here?
A lot of bros just love, like, you know, just taking ground beef out and just like you know, putting it in a pan and frying it up, and it just tastes like ground beef. It doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe what are they missing? Because all, like, people just eat ground beef and rice, ground beef and rice, ground beef and rice on a diet, right? How can you make that ground beef something that you look forward to?
I mean, straight up, you're missing seasoning at that point.
Okay.
Which is what we were talking about. It's, you know, I understand as well at that point, if you're doing it for a diet, you know, obviously we know that fat is also a big proponent of flavor in meat. And if you have to take that out for other reasons, you got to put the flavor in other ways. Literally, fat is so important to the flavor of meat that they have done experiments where they've taken something like an eye of round, which is so super lean, and they've tried to extract as much extra fat from it as possible with like a centrifuge. And then they'll take that, it's now lean beef muscle, and mix it with other animal fat, and it'll taste like... So it'll now taste like ground pork if they mixed it with pork fat, or ground lamb if they mixed it with lamb fat. Just speaking to the importance of fat being flavor. Mm-hmm. So if you're at like a 97, you know, lean, you gotta put seasoning in it.
Yeah.
The cool thing about, you know, having a seasoning line is you work your way through it. So you're doing something Tex-Mex inspired, use the Tex-Mex seasoning. You want a little something different, chili lime. You want some fragrant allspice situations, go the camo. We've got a jalapeno salt in the line now if you like it a little bit spicier. So that's your key without adding a lot of calories to really change up the flavor and still have a really quick and simple meal, because it's like a real quick shake and you've changed the flavor immediately.
Yeah, the 96% lean ground beef from Piedmontese mixed with the meat chilada that she has is amazing. And then if you have it with like rice, then it's even fucking more amazing. But a good hack for anybody listening is to add porking good pork rinds to the mix. They make their the porking good fuck, I don't even know what it's called. It's just like it's like the powder or whatever. I don't even know what that's
called.
Just
like their own seasoning?
No, it's not even it's not seasoning.
Like panko crumbs.
Panko, there we go. Sorry, couldn't find the word. But yeah, you dump that in there with your beef, and it's unbelievable.
You add that in when you're cooking or after?
Yeah, when you're cooking. And you'll get a big old, like every once in a while, you get a big old giant clump of it that comes in. Yeah, that's perfect. It like will mix in just perfectly. And you can also, you could throw a little cheese in there if you wanted, a little marinara sauce. And then you end up with a kind of an Italian thing going on. Yeah. The plain one is the easiest one to work with, because then you can kind of change it to whatever. But you could take that and you can dump that in with your ground beef, and you can turn it into anything, because the panko is going to help absorb whatever flavor you put in there. So if you put like, if you want to turn it into like a buffalo wing style of thing, you could throw some wing sauce in there. I mean, this is gives you a lot of options right here. This is the ultimate hack right here.
I would treat that like a breading. I would add seasoning to that, and then you could dip like chicken tenders in them and put them in the air fryer, and they'll be crispy.
Shit. Right? Oh shit! I'm buying this right now. Oh, you blew my fucking mind with that one. Oh, I eat so many wings. I use the red on the wings all the time.
I have a code for it. I think you can use Mark Bell. I think
on Amazon.
Oh, just on their website.
I want that shit today. Yeah. I'm sorry. I totally would use your code.
I'm letting the peeps know.
All right. Mm-hmm. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that works really good.
Wow.
What other seasonings and things like, you know, I like using salt and I like using some of these seasonings, but sometimes I forget about certain things like pepper and spices. And are there some side things that maybe people aren't really thinking about?
One of my favorites left on is Szechuan peppercorns. Have y'all ever cooked with those?
No. I've had them before, yeah.
They're really delicious. Interesting. So they actually make your mouth tingle, and they have a numbing effect when you eat them. And they're not really super spicy, but they have a really nice heat to them. So I put those, you toast them up, put them in a spice grinder or a coffee grinder. I put a little bit of five spice powder in, so you get your fragrant spices like star anise, cinnamon, and a little bit of salt, and you've got this like crazy different, like again, especially if you're on a diet and you want to just break things up, it's such an easy way to just have a completely different flavor.
Yeah.
Szechuan peppercorns are a big one for me.
I think I've tried that before. I think I used it was like a wet type of seasoning thing, but I think it was in there because every time I would use that seasoning when I would cook stuff, I'd eat the food. I'd be like, man, why is my mouth going kind of numb? Uh-huh. Why is this shit tingling? It's good, but is there something wrong here? So that's what that was.
That's
sick.
Yeah. They have it in that. Have you had chili crisp before?
I don't know.
No.
That's another condiment that always stays in my fridge. It's like all these different like chilies.
You get that
and
from like the Asian food markets?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I've had that before.
Yeah.
I'm looking right at it.
Okay, now we gotta know. Like
that's awesome.
What are some other things?
Is this one right?
Like the is that
Well that's the fancy hipster one, but I'm sure it's good. But there's cheap.
Yeah.
There's cheap and cheaper ones too. But yes, that's conceptually it.
What stays in your fridge? Like things that you think like, all y'all bros need to have this in your fridges.
Fridge or counter, yeah.
I always have salt on my counter, always. Mm-hmm. I have two on each side, one on each side. Like that's how
Are you a truffle salt kind of person?
No, I'm a kosher salt person just because you get a bit of like, it's just more tactile to kind of sprinkle on easily. I always have tallow in my fridge, so beef fat, because I make it myself from the stuff that I cut down and from my dry age stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. And how do you utilize that?
So you can use it in place of any oil. So you can use it to start pan searing something. It makes the best goddamn roast potatoes you've ever had in your life.
Mm. In the oven? Or you pan fry them?
In the oven. So you roast them in the beef tallow. And you can even do, like, I think it was insane, like 15 heads of garlic in there so you confit the garlic in beef tallow. So
I mean, everything's gonna come together really well because you got the garlic and you have the fat to help kind of infuse into the potatoes, right?
Yeah, exactly. It just picks up, it picks up the flavors of whatever's around it. So it's an interesting vehicle to carry that as well. So,
quick question about the beef tallow. Yeah. Do you know if there's any difference or is it just, is there any difference between the Wagyu beef tallow versus normal beef tallow? Do you think that matters? I'm on Amazon right now.
No, okay. So I literally posted a video about this like 5 days ago.
Okay.
Because there's been a trend friend of people who have put like Wagyu tallow in a pan and then they'll deep fry an entire steak and be like, wow, it tastes just like a Wagyu steak. It's like, bro, if you buy $3 pork lard and you deep fry a fucking steak, it's going to taste sick, okay. Like amazing. So the main difference in Wagyu tallow is it's going to have it's got a different titer of fat. So it's like going to be scoopable out of the fridge because it's softer. Mm-hmm. Whereas regular beef tallow is sort of much, much harder, nearly sort of flaky if you try and push into it. But no.
Okay. What about just using bacon, like leftover bacon grease?
Also great.
Good option.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing at the end of the day. You know, there are so many ways that you can preserve and reuse so much animal fat that we have access to, and it's very, very easy to use it. Mm. I made duck fat caramels the other day, which are definitely not a diet food.
What are caramels?
I know, like the candy.
Like, yeah. But you said, do you eat carbs though? Because we talked about bread, and you were like, "R.I.P."
Yeah,
yeah, you do.
It makes my ass fat, but yeah, I love it.
That's desirable.
I love food.
Right?
That's my problem.
Yeah, adds weight to the right spots, right?
Okay.
Oh man, that was. I was like, can I laugh at this?
We need a mix of foods, right? You can't just, you know, you can't just always be eating meat and fruit and that's it.
Yeah.
Right. It gets to be boring after a certain point.
You know, for me, it's like I have tremendous respect for people that are really dialed in on what works for them. We have had, you know, we've come across some issues, I guess, every now and again where people think that we're a carnivore product and there's very small amounts of sugar in these and it's designed to just balance the flavor. Mm-hmm. Like overall for your macros, it's not going to hit you at all, right? Yeah. But there'll
people are
be
a little
people,
too crazy about their sugar.
Well, but they'll be like, you've been misleading. And I'm like, except that these came out before the carnivore diet got popular. I'm sorry that I picked the cool name. So I empathize.
Hardcore carnivore, there's fucking garlic in here.
That's not carnivore.
This should be a whole steer in this jar.
I want my money back. It's like you could have read the label.
You don't understand. Available. It's a religion.
They've done that for my cookbook too because it has the same name. And people are like, this has fries in it and a salad recipe.
All right, we're changing the name. It's Softcore, okay? Everybody just relax. Softcorecarnivore.com, okay? Yeah. Not a big deal.
No. It's romance novel.
Yeah. Just cross it out and just write on every single one of them, right?
You know, I am actually really happy that you have all that like trademarked and all of that, because it is nice pissing off carnivores. It's like the most entertaining thing to see how mad. I mean, I know a lot of y'all are carnivore. I'm not trying to make fun of y'all, but when y'all are mad, it's funny. It's
funny. There's no reason to get all mad.
Yeah, there isn't. No. But if you are, I'll laugh at you.
Yeah, you make it really easy for us. No, I'm kidding. Like, no, listen, you can use this and still be on a carnivore diet. It's fine. But also, you don't own the word carnivore.
Yeah.
How long did it take you before this became a business? Like, did you have a previous job where you had to wait a little bit to like leave that job and to pursue this even further?
No, I was already kind of working, even back then it wasn't even called an influencer, but I was already really a full-time influencer back then, because I had enough sponsorship deals, cool. of, you know, recipe creations, mm-hmm. things like that, that I was funding myself. And that's why it was like, I wonder what would happen, you know, t-shirts and stuff like that, that steak and bourbon, a complete meal, you know,
if I had my own product. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, and then that's where it came from. And now you sort of realize that you're handling this delicate baby of like, oh shit, people like this. Oh shit. I have to bring more flavors out. Like, wow, cool. You know, and there were people who were really dedicated to our brand, and I still make every single seasoning. It starts at home in my house, blended by me. It's the way that I think it should taste. And I think the coolest part about that is that when someone likes it, it's like agreeing with you, you know, nearly like, that's mm-hmm. that's cool because that's how I think steak should taste. And you like it too, so yay, you know.
Yeah. Cool. And you guys do eat pretty clean. I mean, you're both in good shape, so that's probably helpful, right?
It is. It definitely helps as well. And we try, like, it's like anything, like, we try and just be reasonable about what we eat. I've tried to personally cut out all dessert or sugar just because so for me, that's like the door is either all the fucking way open or it's shut.
Game on, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
If I just don't do it, it doesn't become a thing. He has a whole snack cupboard you can ask him about.
And he's able to actually have moderation with that shit. Like, when I buy bags or something, I eat the whole bag. You ain't going to see me take a few and then, okay, put it back. No.
Do you have to, go in another room when he does that? No. You're like, I got to go somewhere else.
No, hey. Because I save my calories for steak. Like, I save it. I save it for the wagyu,
your own
the fat,
you're
the
out.
Beef fat that's in my, we've done a lot of pork belly lately, too.
Oh, yeah. Pork belly.
I've got a pork belly air fryer recipe for you.
Oh, let's go.
You're going to lose your shit.
Can we talk about it?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Buy the strips.
Okay.
Cut them up into about 2-inch strips.
Okay.
Right? So buy a belly, cut it into 2-inch strips, and then make incisions so it's like a hedgehog, but not all the way through.
Ooh. Is it this thing?
That's pork belly burnt ends.
Oh, God.
So they're also really good.
This is ridiculous.
Come on, man. This is on your YouTube channel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yo, I don't know. Pork belly. Yeah.
So that's a thing that's Damn. About to happen. But you cut it into strips, you put it in the air fryer for at 390 for 20 minutes, then turn it over another 20 minutes, and then you season it because otherwise the seasoning will burn, and 400 for 5 minutes, and they come out crispy. I just filmed a video. I haven't released it yet. Otherwise I'd be like, look. But they come out crispy, ridiculous, delicious.
I have a quick question. How do people know sometimes if their pork belly is ready to eat? Because the amount of time that you just mentioned there, mm-hmm. I'm just like, damn, have I ever cooked pork belly that long? Yeah. Sometimes I eat the pork belly, I'm like, soft, but it's good.
I did a good job on this one.
And I'm like, I could be taking a risk right now, but I'm pretty sure I'm okay. So when do you know your pork belly is safe to eat?
Pork belly is an interesting one, right? Because you got big seams of fat that you have to render.
Yeah.
And it tastes better when it's rendered. It's softened. It's like a nicer mouthfeel.
Okay.
But also, basically, the meat as it cooks is going to tense up and then relax again. And that's why you want to cook it so long.
I'm so fat that I know exactly how that tastes. My previous fat self knows all about that. I could tell it's caramelized. Yeah. It's got a little sweetness to it.
How quickly do you release your podcasts?
Pretty fast.
Yeah.
Maybe this one.
This will be out
3 to 5 days.
Yeah, early next week.
Oh, I can probably tell you then because we'll do it by that stage that we're about to bring out a burnt end sauce.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
let's go. Damn. That's gonna be good.
Yeah,
that's gonna be really good.
It's very dangerous. That's why there's been a lot of pork belly in our house. Yes.
You probably haven't cooked pork belly in the oven though, have you? You probably just cook fry it up or something.
I air fry that shit, man.
Yeah.
That's okay. Great though. Mm.
Yeah,
it's great. I made some crispy pork belly bites. Basically, I tried to make burnt ends, but they ended up Chinese char siu. You can't fuck it up, mm-hmm. right? Even if it's squishy,
yeah.
It's still pretty good.
Also, the air fryer doesn't take very long to get super hot, right?
It doesn't.
It gets right to the temperature pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so you probably don't have to cook it that long, probably. Maybe a little longer.
I think that's I think I've been taking risks. I truly have been taking risks.
What about eating some raw food? What are the risks involved with that, being a meat scientist?
So the idea is that there's bacteria on the outside of everything, on us, everything on this table. So if you take a steak, there's bacteria all over the outside of it, but it's effectively sterile on the inside, which is why you can eat it rare. But if you were to run that through a grinder and mix the bacteria and the sterile meat together, that's why you have to cook ground meat to a different temperature. Having said that, that's the lowest common denominator, stopping Darwinism in its tracks, right? We have a really good food safety system here in the United States, so you can take controlled risks. So I will eat steak tartare at a good restaurant. I'll eat soft-boiled eggs. I'll eat sushi.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are, how many times have you seen on a menu, the consumption of oysters and undercooked food? It's just the warning. I probably wouldn't eat it at certain restaurants.
Yeah.
It's a common sense thing, you know? But yeah, I eat it for sure.
It just has to do with time, right? Because we were, we've obviously used to eat stuff raw. We didn't mm-hmm. always have such great access to fire, but it's the amount of time, right? So from the time the animal's killed, and there could be so many different things that happens to that particular meat by the time it gets on your plate or to your home, right?
It's usually pretty controlled all the way up until it gets to the grocery store. And then it's obviously at the mercy of the grocery store or the butcher shop
mm-hmm.
as to are they keeping it at the right temperature? it's mainly a temperature thing more than anything.
Yeah, you don't know if they had it in the display case for a day or two and then they had to freeze it again or whatever. I mean, they're not supposed to do stuff like that, but they probably do sometimes.
Probably. Right. It's like the guy spitting in your burger at McDonald's. You know, like we've seen videos of, like, does that happen in every Big Mac? No. But does it happen? Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, and bacteria will rapidly double and grow the more time you leave it exposed. But the two biggest risks on the animal for contamination are the hide and the gut contents. Mm. So that's why there's really, really strict measures in place. It's amazing. Deer and elk are much more forgiving than cattle as well. Otherwise, you'd have like a lot of sick hunters. Like from some of the shit that I've seen, the way that people process their animals, like wild. But yeah, you just have to be really careful taking the hide off. And there's very strict processes in the slaughterhouses themselves about what happens, like once the carcass comes off. And it usually gets a lactic acid or a hot water spray once it's a side of beef before it goes into the chiller for bacteria control as well.
Have you explored some stuff with whether meat is negatively impacting our environment? Is that something that you've looked into much at all, or what are your thoughts on that?
So I obviously, you know, understand that that's a part of doing what I do, being carnivorous. It's not something that I can speak to with a level of assurity as some, you know, other people. I know that it's a lot maligned. I know that regenerative farming and sustainable grazing are great options. I know that 60% of the land that's currently used for agriculture could not be used for crops. So you're taking, because it's, you know, too rocky or unsustainable. Mm-hmm. So you're taking an area that couldn't be used for that and turning it into food for humans. You can take spent brewer's grains, which are inedible for humans, and put them into an animal and turn that in. That's upcycling, you know. Mm-hmm. And more than anything, I think the thing is, especially when it comes to cattle, 3% of greenhouse gas emissions are because of cattle. Mm. The more likely you'll hear the number about 20%. That's globally. So 3% in the US. So you doing meat, anyone else doing Meatless Monday, you're going to, you will save more carbon emissions taking one less international flight a year than being vegetarian for a year.
Wow.
Just for context.
Or planning your trips to the grocery store more efficiently.
Correct.
Mm. Something like that.
So I think that sustainability and particularly animal welfare is something that the industry is taking very seriously, and they should, and it's a conversation that we need to have for ourselves and the next generation. But I do think that there's like a completely reasonable middle ground that we can move forward, and it's not impossible meat.
Yeah, it's not the impossible burger, right?
No.
Have you tried it?
I have. So what should scare the shit out of you about the impossible burger is all of the regulations that surround meat, none of them surround that. So they can make any claim they want, and there's no laws that exist that stop them from doing that because it's uncharted territory.
So what, like, let me ask you this. Are they making any claims that you've seen that you're like,
oh, yeah.
Like what?
Mainly about the sustainability aspect of it. The model, first of all, no one has scaled it to the point where it could actually replace meat.
Yeah.
The amount of fields that they would need to grow the soy proteins that they use to emulate the myoglobin change would surpass what is needed for livestock. Like, it's not scalable.
Wow.
So there's a lot of conversations that need to happen. Everything right now is hypotheses with no proof.
But it tastes just like beef.
Except shitter. It doesn't taste like beef.
It
doesn't taste like beef. It's a facsimile. It's like carob. Did you ever get that when you were a kid? Someone tried to give you carob instead of chocolate, and you're like, huh? Sick.
You're like, nope.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
Immediately, no.
Yeah, a friend of mine, because he was trying to like stop eating as much meat, and he had the Impossible Burger. He's like, it tastes just like steak. And I had one. I'm like, dog, this is shit.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
How do you deal with some of your social media? Like, do you get inflammatory comments here and there? And do you bother, or do you just, you know, post and ghost? Or how do you handle it?
I used to give a shit. Social media's gotten so much worse. And I have to keep adopting the new profiles, you know? Like, I'm old. I'm 42. And you know, I shouldn't be on TikTok. And yet I am. So being on there and just knowing that you're the old people on there is a thing. I've seen a huge rise in people just being bitches for the sake of being bitches. and trolling for the sake of trolling. And so I usually just don't bother responding. If someone has a genuine question, I think it's important to engage. But there's some stupid stuff that would make me stupid to dedicate my time responding to it.
On TikTok, I'm just curious because it seems that there's a... The best word is just there's a lot of wokeness on TikTok. So when you talk about, I don't know what your TikTok profile looks like, but I'm assuming there's meat, there's barbecue, there's seasonings, and maybe Gen Z is angry at that. Is there any of that that's ringing bells, or am I totally off?
So I did a TikTok where, no, you're right, that's what's on there. And I do a lot of meat myth busting where I'll like find other TikToks and be like, let me tell you what's going on here, actually. Yeah. So I found one and I didn't realize how big the account was. And it's these really young dudes and they're like, we're going to check this steak and see how it compares, $60 steak compared to a $4 steak. And they bought like literally the most tender muscle and then one of the most, you know, toughest. Yeah. And then he's like, I don't know why this is $4. It's this much steak. I don't know why this is $4. I don't know if it's going to look like give me a disease or something. So I did it like stitch with it where I'm like, I don't know why you think it's cool to act dumb, but real quick. and I'm like, hey, let me explain to you how beef pricing works. Let me explain to you how these da da da. And I kind of made fun of them. Well, I didn't realize that they had 3 million followers. And they did a follow up. Which I'm sitting here laughing, honestly, because all it did was like boost my engagement through the roof, which is not what I intended, but you know, I'll take it as a side effect. But all of their fans like, brah, it's just a joke. Don't you know it's just a joke?
Yep.
I'm like, I weep for the next sense of humor. Like they're not even gonna think Saturday Night Live is funny in their generation, you know?
Saturday Night Live has gotten a little bit unfunny over the past few years.
Yeah.
That's not true. As funny as it used to be.
Yeah. Well, everyone says that. But yes, I agree. It was a bad example. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, they're like, brah, they're just making it for entertainment, brah. Brah. Brah.
That's a good American bro accent. You hit that one on the head. Yeah. Yeah.
I can do it from time to time. It works.
I want to know about this. Because you mentioned that you were a recipe designer for a while, right? Mm-hmm. You created recipes. That is something I haven't heard about much. So if someone loves to cook and they love creating new stuff, how do they get into selling their recipes to people if that's a thing?
So there's two ways you can do it. So the way that I did it is I obviously have, I have bigger social media profiles. So it starts with companies coming to you to try and promote your product. And then at the same time, like when you have the bigger contracts, they'll be like, hey, can you also develop recipes for this, that, and the other? So I work with Kingsford Charcoal. You'll find some of my recipes on the bags of some of their products. If you want to do it without the public facing thing, it's a food economists do that. So they're like every brand that you're involved in, even Carnivore Crisps, you know, or the pork guys, they can hire people to make recipes for them. So when you go to their website, there are recipes there. And usually they're food economists that do that. There are people who ghostwrite cookbooks like that because maybe someone's a celebrity that doesn't really cook that well but wants you to buy their book. That wasn't me. I wrote my whole book. But, you know, and they'll work with someone like that on that too. Yeah. So it's really just getting in there and testing it again to making sure it works and taking out the variables. And you have to make sure the recipe works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you learn about like the digestion of meat and stuff like that too? Being
not as much. Mm. Not as much. We generally deal with it to the point of consumption and no further.
Not past that.
No, not so much past that.
Food scientists kind of do that, right?
They do, and nutritionists would do a lot of that as well. It's just, you know, meat science in itself is so specific. Like a lot of people are like, what happens when you cook it this way? I'm like, well, that's a thermodynamics thing. That's like a food science thing. That's not even a meat science thing because you're talking about the reaction that happens from the cooking itself. Mm. So, you know, it's nearly like doctor specialities. It's, yes, they're all doctors, but you have your areas of expertise for sure. Mm. So I was fascinated with the idea of like, well, how can you make it more tender? And why is there so much stuff that affects it? And I think it's really neat to empower yourself like now to be able to stand at a meat case and be like, I know what that is. I know that's a really good value cut. That's fucking awesome. I feel great, you know. That's what feels really good about it.
Who's like the standing champion at this butcher thing that you're going to?
The current reigning champs are Ireland. And the problem is I've got friends on the Australian, Brazilian, American, and a couple of other Icelandic UK teams. So it's going to be, I have to remain impartial. But it's going to be brutal because Butch is, you know, they're going to give each other a lot of shit. It's going to be great.
Yo, Brazilian steakhouse. I'm really curious about what those Brazilians are going to make. How do you watch this thing? Like, is it on, going to be live?
Yeah, they're going to live stream it from their YouTube channel. But yeah, if y'all want to come, you just come as my guest. But they will be live streaming it and you'll be able to see these guys literally 3.5 hours. And actually the biggest...
Does somebody cook some of this stuff up? You get to eat some of the stuff?
They're going to probably donate it to...
like local restaurants?
Something? Yeah, or charities like to feed the homeless is generally what they do with that, as long as there's no, you know, nothing in the way of them preventing them to do that. It's going to be sick. So they have 3.5 hours to do it, but the challenge is, you know, normally in a butcher shop, they're in a cool room. Mm. And if y'all know, well, you might not know, it's really, really hard to cut up fat when it starts getting soft, when it starts warming up. And they're going to be in an arena,
a warmer environment.
So it's going to be a real challenge for them to work really quickly. It's going to be really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of neat, huh?
That's really cool.
It's a real craft. It's a real lost art. The meat industry moved to just sending things out pre-cut to grocery stores. That was the other reason it was really hard to find certain cuts, because they would just identify what was selling, grind everything else because America always wants ground beef, and just ship out what there was demand for. So you had to go to maybe a small butcher who was breaking down the whole carcass, and you could ask for a tri-tip, but if the guy before you bought the tri-tip, well, that's it. That's the only one tri-tip per side, you know. So the art of butchery was nearly lost for a while there until it sort of started to become a resurgence and we started to break down whole animals again instead of just getting them in plastic.
I'm curious, since you know a lot about different meat prices and all that, but let's say like there's a college student listening and all they really know, like they're like, I can't afford ribeyes. Mm-hmm. All they really know about is eating a bunch of ground beef and they want to buy some really good tasting meat, except they don't have the budget. So what would be the best cuts that are generally a little bit less expensive that they could afford?
I think tri-tip is a great cut. The tri-tip. Other thing is, it's going to cost you more up front, but if you can buy bigger pieces and cut them into smaller steaks yourself, that will help too. The best value that you can possibly get is to buy what's called a top blade roast. And you can cut flat iron steaks out of that. And these flat iron steaks end up being about this big each. They can feed three. They can feed one of you, three of someone else. And they end up being like $7 each.
Whoa.
Yeah. And they're really tender and they're really packed with flavor. They're one of my favorite steaks. So top blade roasts.
And generally, you have to try to go to a butcher to find that. You're not just going to be able to go to Rayleigh's.
So the other thing is, you should always try and talk to your butcher or your meat market, even at your local grocery store. Now, some of them will be like, sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. And some of them will have programs where, as long as you're willing to pay for it, they'll order it in for you. They can order anything. They just need notice. So it can never hurt to ask.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got anything over there, Andrew?
I'm just like Googling top blade roast where, and like nothing even comes up like near me or anything like that. So it's.
You might even be able to buy them as flat irons, which are also not expensive. So if you can see a flat iron steak, just grab that. It's a great, great value steak too.
Got it. So what about like, because I think I could be way wrong, but somebody had told me, I think it was Michaela Peterson, that like Costco imports their meat from Australia. If that's true, is there anything like weird about like importing meat, or like, has that been all like on the up and up, or should we still just focus on getting our meat locally?
No, it's completely on the up and up. Yeah. There are some, you know, it just depends what you want. So not all Costco meat is imported. All their lamb is from Australia.
That's what it was. It was their lamb. Sorry.
Yeah, but you have shit lamb in America.
Let's go.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We have a lot of lamb in Australia per capita as well. So it's like anything, right? Like we talked about like get it where it's best from. So it's the lamb that is normally imported. All of Chipotle's meat is imported. Beef is imported because they need it to be grass fed, and America does not produce enough grass fed beef to feed Chipotle. So that's all from Australia too.
Wow.
So, but anything that's imported to the United States as a meat still has to pass USDA FSIS requirements. So it's still. It's still like they go and approve their facilities to be able to export it. Mm. So yes, it's safe. Yes, it's up to scratch.
Mm. What's the deal with factory farming? We hear a lot about that. Do you know much about that?
Like, I don't know heaps about it. What do you want to know?
Well, I just don't know much about it. Like, because there seems to be a lot of regulations, especially here in the United States. Are there practices that are still, you know, just foul and just way outside of what their regulations should be, I guess?
So everything usually works within the regulations. It's mainly more that there's a distaste for people about what just happens when you produce anything on a scale like that. The other concern for some people is that there's four main companies that control the industry and you know, I'm not going to try and pretend that there's not some issues with pricing and that they've had to watch them controlling supply and demand and things like that. But I think where people really get stuck is the idea that there's these factories, like, you know, Simpsons did a great, great version of it, where the animals go in and get treated just like, you know, a commodity and shipped out. So first of all, every cow or steer in America is born on a ranch and is born onto grass. If it's a beef cow, it'll spend some time with its mama and then go to grass and then go to a feedlot. So nothing is born on concrete and done that way. The other thing is, and I didn't know this because, like, I grew up in Melbourne, 5 million people, urban as fuck, like, did not have any agriculture classes. So there's a thing going on in California at the moment called Prop 12, where they're trying to ban the import of any pork from other states that use what we call sow stalls, right? And it's one of those things that's just not that simple. If you are a farmer or you've ever raised pigs, you'll know the very first thing that a mother pig will do if you leave it alone with these babies is sit on them and potentially kill them. They have really weird maternal instincts. So they keep them in these sow stalls in these confined areas for the safety of the mothers and the babies. And there's some stuff that they have to do to animals that is just because it is on that scale, which is probably a little less palatable. Mm-hmm. But there's other stuff like that that gets completely lost in translation in terms of, like, well, what's actually going to be better? There's been a lot of work done into animal welfare to try and increase. Anthony Bourdain said it once in one of his books that, you know, there's a direct correlation between animal welfare and good quality meat. Mm. And so if you want good quality meat, you effectively have to look after the animal. And so they really work in tandem. And right. The industry has been trying to do a lot for that. I've been in processing plants. I've been on slaughter floors. I've seen dodgier shit in small areas. Mm. I support the entire industry as a whole. I hate the narrative that, like, knowing where your meat comes from makes a difference. I think it's a scare tactic for people, honestly. Mm. Meaning, like, oh, if you buy from the guy locally at the farmer's market, well, I've seen...
Yeah, know your local farmer. I always think that's bullshit, too.
I mean, why? Why doesn't a farmer in Vermont earn your dollars as much as a farmer in California? They both came from farmers originally, you know? And someone is working hard to make those dollars in America either way.
So. Yeah, it's part of the reason why I brought it up. I mean, again, I'm sure there's plenty of practices that are outside the lines, but there are a lot of regulations, and it really wouldn't suit you well to mistreat the animals because it wouldn't be good quality meat, and eventually I'm sure your farm would probably get shut down if that was the case. And I haven't personally, like, visited, like, a slaughterhouse. I haven't personally been behind the scenes, but just in, like, driving by and seeing cows and just observing them for long periods of time, like, they're herd animals. Like, they hang out on top of each other.
100%.
And people are like, I don't like that they're so close to each other. You'll go and look at a field. The field will be gigantic, and all the cows are literally on top of each other. Like, they're choosing that. They're not in a cage, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, they're all huddled in the one area that's what's natural to them. And that's why it's actually more humane to keep them all together at the slaughterhouse, like, right before they go up into the ramp. They've learned with pigs that they've designed the chutes to be curved, and they'll paint the sides of them red because it calms the pig in the peripheral vision. If they can't see where they're going, the animal's much calmer. So they've changed a lot of those practices to keep the animal as calm as possible right up until slaughter. And the slaughter process itself, like, you know, I'm a hunter. I'm a rifle hunter. My number one aim is to drop that animal as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. I personally, this is just my opinion, think that I've seen more inhumane bow hunting from people who are like, I want to get back to what it was like back in the day. It's like, yeah, but the animal's running. I promise you that pig, that sheep, mm-hmm. that steer is not running in a slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. It is over like that, you know?
Right.
So we've got to consider that as well.
How does it get killed?
So they have, for beef, they have what they call a captive bolt.
It just goes right into the brain or something, right?
Yeah. So it renders them, it's a big bolt that shoots out. I love this.
Yeah, I'll show you exactly how it's done.
The funny thing is that some of this is true. Like the sluicing, the collecting of the blood in a giant sluice, that's true.
Oh my God.
So the bolt goes, it cracks their skull and goes into their brain and it renders them unconscious. Mm. And then they are shackled by their hind leg, lifted up, and they're bled out. And it's actually the exsanguination that kills them. But they're non-responsive at this point. Mm. But that's another thing that a lot of people don't understand. Like, you know, if you don't understand what brain dead is, but the body's still alive, then right. you're not going to really understand why that's a completely humane practice.
Right.
Mm. With pigs, they usually gas them. They used to use electrodes on their heads. They now just lower them into gas, and it's much more humane, too.
Yeah, none of it's ever going to sound good, but it's like, how do we get our food?
Yeah. You know how many animals die from crop machines? That's why no food is vegan. Because you couldn't actually, like the amount of field mice and things like that. And most of the time, the best arguments the vegan can make is that, is the sentience of those animals different to a larger animal? And it's ridiculous.
Mm. Why don't they gas cows? Might sound dumb, but I'm like, they gas pigs, but why don't they gas cows?
They're too big, and they don't need to. The pigs are much more aware. They are, and much more squirrely. Cows will just move in front of the next one in front of them. So they're safer to do with captive bolt.
Okay.
Andrew, want to take us on out of here, buddy?
Sure thing. Thank you, everybody, for checking out today's episode. Real quick, shout out to all the vegans that do watch our podcast. They never comment until a conversation like today pops up. So thanks for watching, guys. Appreciate it. And everyone else, drop us a comment down below also on anything you guys found interesting today. And hit that like button and subscribe if you guys are not subscribed already. Please follow the podcast at MB Power Project on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. My Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter is at I am Andrew Z. And Seema, where are you at?
Hit up the Discord. It's in the description. And if you are angry about anything that was mentioned here, let us know. We are curious about your thoughts. It doesn't help us at all if you comment. at Seema Yin Yang on Instagram and YouTube, at Seema Yin Yang on TikTok and Twitter. Jess, where can people find you and all the seasonings?
Jess Pryles on everything, Hardcore Carnival on everything, and let them know, not me, because I'm not interested. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, give our fans like a percentage off or something. Can we make something up? Like 10% yeah. off or something?
Yeah,
can we make a code?
We'll do
power
a
Power Project.
We'll do Power Project for it'll be active for a little bit from once this goes live for 10% off.
There we go. Ooh, yeah. All right.
Guys, and really buy a fuck ton of those seasonings because they're really fucking.
It makes a big difference.
It makes a big difference, man.
I'm at Mark's Millie Bell. Strength is never weakness. Weakness is never strength. Catch you guys later. Bye.